The climate is changing. Its populations are growing. The need to understand and manage groundwater is going to continue to grow.
It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
Talk about farm to table, and inevitably we start talking about how food's produced, and a key part of food production is water. You can't produce food without water. And then somehow that all gets tied into data that's being fed to the clouds, and usually, that's a whole different symmetry than we sometimes think about with clouds and water coming from clouds, and now we're saying data to clouds. And it's about water. It's about food. Well, my guest today, Marion Singer, is the co-founder and CEO of Well Intel. Marion, welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
That name, Well, that suggests someplace you get water.
Yes.
And Intel suggests intelligence. So have you figured out some way to combine wells and intelligence?
Yes. Yes, we have. So maybe I can back up.
Sure.
Kind of tell you a little origin story. So I'm a co-founder. My other co-founder's name is Nick Hayes. We were, prior to founding Well Intel, we were strategy consultants, and we worked primarily with energy and water OEMs on new product development.
OEMs.
Original equipment manufacturer. So
okay.
You can think about the people who make pumps or make engines or solar arrays and things
right.
like that in those areas. Had a project, spent a year on a global basis learning about groundwater for a specific groundwater equipment manufacturer. Finished up the project and realized that what we just learned is that no matter where you are in the world, unless you're most of the time drilling a new well or fixing one that's broken, nobody knows where the groundwater is. And that's a problem because groundwater is about two-thirds of irrigation water. If you're going to irrigate, it's about two-thirds of your source, and it's about half of drinking supply, at least here in the United States.
Instead, some people are scratching their head because groundwater versus like surface water.
Right.
Is water that flows in that's irrigation, right? Is that what they usually consider surface water?
Surface water is water that comes from lakes, rivers, maybe the canal system
canal,
here in California.
Right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's surface water.
And that's surface water, yep.
But groundwater, could it be from an aquifer?
That is the definition. It could be a water table, could be an aquifer, could also just be a little catchment basin depending on the geology of where you are. But it's the water stored in the ground.
So we get too basic here, but if we talk about, like in our case, farm to table, we're looking at there's no food if we don't have water.
Right.
And sunshine and, you know, some other kind of nutrients and ingredients, but with the water. But you know, what share of food is being watered from groundwater?
So that's when we talk about two-thirds of irrigation water, you can think of it. The 17 states west of the Mississippi use about three-quarters of the irrigation water. So a lot of specialty crops like we have here in California, your certainly wines, here in Salinas, the berries, everything here is grown, almonds in the Central Valley, pomegranates and the such. So a lot of specialty crops. East of the Mississippi or maybe a little bit not quite east, you've got about a quarter of the crops that are raised use groundwater, and that's primarily corn, particularly in states like Nebraska, Kansas. So you've got a kind of a split, a bifurcation, you know, primarily the specialty crops that we've got out here out west are the ones that use irrigation water.
Mm-hmm.
Special states like Kansas and Nebraska are using a lot, too, specifically for their grains.
So the wells across the country,
yep.
they got the whole principle, I guess, that is drop till they hit a water table. I mean, they're as deep as they need to be able to get water.
Yes, originally. That's, you know, when they were first drilled,
right.
they were drilled down to to the water table, and then to give them the sufficient volume that they need in order to do what it is they need to do. So, you know, a home well would be not quite as deep as an irrigation well, for example, that would need more water, more volume, and so would need to go deeper. However, because reliance on groundwater is growing, and, you know, populations are increasing, industrial ag is using more water, and so are businesses in general. What you find is that because we can't see groundwater, it's hidden in underground, most of the time we don't know that there's a problem until it's too late. And it means that we are pumping more than is being recharged. Mm-hmm. So, you know, groundwater has a kind of a cyclical pattern to it. It recharges in the fall and winter and is pumped out in the spring and summer. If you don't see it, though, you think that you've got more than enough. Yeah. And you just keep on pumping. And what ends up happening is, you know, you get down to a point where you're actually, you know, the water level is getting low enough that you're getting to your pump and your pump's burning out. And then you have to take your well deeper because you have to keep chasing the water down. And this lack of understanding of being able to see our groundwater so that we can proactively manage it in a way that makes it sustainable for us for a long time, it is the problem that we're facing. And what WellIntel does is we take a little bit of sensor technology, little simple sensor that gets installed at the top of any well. It can be an irrigating well, it can be a home well, it could be a monitoring well. And we provide water level data in real time continuously so that data goes up to the cloud. Visualization tool so that people who care about groundwater, who depend on groundwater, growers, mines, businesses, processors, communities who depend on groundwater see in real time what's happening. Where is their water level declining? Where is it increasing? Maybe because there's some nice recharge happening somewhere, and so they can proactively make decisions about what they're going to do different, so that they can manage.
So you have a gadget.
We have a little sensor. Yeah, we
and
have
that
a sensor.
So it's a, what is it, like the size of an iPhone or
it's
what?
It's about the size of, somebody calls it like the size of a blender.
Oh, okay, a little bigger.
A little bigger than a.
And so you put it in a well, and
you don't put it in a well. You put it at the top of the well. So here
it goes. It can tell you how deep it.
It uses a little digital form of sound. Hmm. So it makes a little chirp. And the sound goes into the well, and the readings come back. We push it up to the cloud. Cloud does all the calculations, and it tells you where that water level is. So it can tell you when it's resting, when it's pumping, how far down does it go, when it's recovering, how long does it take it to go back up again, so that you're building a complete picture of that resource, where it is, how it's trending. And then you can make some decisions.
So we're getting our rain out of the clouds, but then we're pushing data about the rain into the clouds.
Exactly. Yep,
no,
there you go.
Data, clouds, I tell you. You know, so if you track these wells, so what that's actually telling you then more is quantity.
It is telling you quantity, yep.
So across the country and again farms and cities and others, you're helping them keep track of how they're doing with how much water are in these wells.
What is their, you can think about it not just the wells, but you extrapolate it out to, you know, kind of the aquifer, the water supply around it. It's like, you know, the well level is the indicator of what it looks like in the whole area, right?
Okay.
So what we're doing is saying, here's what your water supply looks like in this area. And in some places in this area, it looks better. And in some places in this area, it might be more stressed.
So you take a really big aquifer like the Ogallala.
Yes.
It's an aquifer that covers, what, 6-8 states or something.
Yes.
It goes forever. But is it pretty level across the board through that entire aquifer that it's that the water levels will be about the same all over? Or is it vary because of rock formations or something?
Yeah, so two things that impact it. One is certainly geology. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of geology changes within that. And so, you know, there will be different levels just naturally based on the geology over those, you know, 6-8 states. The other thing that impacts it is how much are you pumping out? Mm-hmm. So there are places in Nebraska that have been pumping a lot, and their levels are going down. Mm-hmm. Pretty dramatically. And there are other places that either have better recharge or other sources of water, like your surface water, right, that aren't doing this, and so they're not impacted as much, and so they look better, or they're healthier for the long run. And so it depends on kind of where you are and what the geology looks like, and then also what the groundwater is being used for and how much it's being used.
So if you draw it down too much, the ground actually sinks, right?
Right, right. So what happens there is, groundwater is water that is stored within, the gaps between rock, right? Mm-hmm. And having that water within those gaps creates a strength, mm-hmm, of the system. But when you pull the water out, that the crystalline system collapses and you can't pump it back up again. So you lose that storage permanently if you get to that place that you've withdrawn it too much.
So even if you can't recharge, when they say recharge, it just is trying to get the water to percolate downward, right, back into the, and so sometimes there's lakes and fields and things that are flooded that maybe percolate back
over time, yep.
Which is... I've heard some people say that as good as drip irrigation is, that was the one good thing about flood irrigation is that you could get even more water soaked back into the ground, even though you use more water than you do with drip. More of it went back down.
Yes, yeah. That. So it's kind of a trade-off there.
Yeah.
What's your goal? And the thing about, the thing about aquifers and groundwater is Ogallala is a very old aquifer, and it's
a couple million
years. Yeah, it's old, and so getting water back down to many parts of Ogallala would take many lifetimes.
Right.
So pulling that water out is pulling out ancient water. There are lots of other places that have more sandy soils, recharge in weeks, So. So again, right, your geology is playing a big role in terms of your use and your sustainability.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So now the other issue that comes up when I think about water and knowing how much there is there is that there are more governmental agencies that are getting involved in groundwater.
Right.
And I get the impression that some of that is just like quality because they're trying to figure out how much the groundwater is getting polluted. But I suppose they're also interested in how much there is.
Yep. So the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act here in California, mm-hmm, it has, the idea is to get back on track with sustainable management by 2040. And it has six deadly sins that it is trying to, make sure, are obviated, don't happen. And three of them have to do with quantity. And one has to do with quantity in a related way, but it is subsidence that sinking of the ground. It's a permanent lowering. It is a harm to somebody else. And then there is a one part of it called seawater intrusion.
Mm-hmm.
And
really, you measure that too?
What happens with seawater is you can think about, water, what we call is like it's one water, right? It's surface water, it's groundwater, it's all kind of moving in between each other, right? And the seawater is one of those. And what happens with groundwater is if there's enough there, then it creates a pressure that keeps seawater from coming in through the rock and then infiltrating. When you pull it down, that pressure is no longer there, and then seawater can come in and contaminate your...
Once it's in, it never goes back.
Yeah, it's hard to get it back out again.
Yeah.
Not my area of expertise, but you have to... So, it's going to take some time.
So, I'm wondering, of these different aquifers, are you aware of anything that's shown that foods produced from one or the other have different flavors or different... quality?
No, I don't. No.
Makes you wonder. Yeah. It's kind of like just because we do it for people, say that you can bring water in from the South Pacific or something, and it's different in different ways.
Yeah.
I kind of wonder, you know, if you are watering. And certainly it gets into quality, though, issues and safety. Now, your company's not doing that. But if water's contaminated, that's not good for people, or if it's even watering the plants, it's bad, too.
Right.
Are you aware of anything that's going on that would get us into a more quality monitoring of the waters?
There are companies that do quality monitors. There's certainly, and you know, you run the whole gamut in terms of quality, you know, from the things like nitrates and phosphates that are coming from fertilizers and manures, and then you can get all the way up to the hexavalent chromium, which is you know,
arsenic,
a byproduct or arsenic. You know, although arsenic is something that's naturally occurring. So you've got the naturally occurring ones and the ones that aren't. So you've got this broad spectrum, and depending on where you are, you can have, you know, one or the other or none of these contaminants. And so, you know, an example from Wisconsin, you think, you know, we're based in Milwaukee, and you think of Wisconsin as being a very water/groundwater rich place because we're right up against Lake Michigan. And but what runs through Milwaukee is the subcontinental divide. And
I thought that was a Rocky Mountain.
Yeah, no, subcontinental divide. So on one side, it's about 15 miles west of Milwaukee. On one side, when it rains, all water flows towards Lake Michigan. On the other side, when it rains, all water flows towards the Mississippi. And there is a community outside on the Mississippi side that had been growing by leaps and bounds, and it had been a groundwater community. And they just kept pulling it down and pulling it down until they actually got to a place where they were they were pulling out water that had been contaminated by naturally occurring radium. Because it got they got far enough down in their aquifer, and now they need to pull in water from Lake Michigan in order to offset that. So, you know, that contamination, there's a lot going on with that contamination.
So you get all this information. So if you've got these. So people are monitoring all these different wells. From a management standpoint, I think it's good to know you're going to run out of water or not.
Right.
But how do you go beyond that? I mean, they need to know how they're drawing down. How else do they use the information?
Yeah, good. So if you think about, there's a couple different ways you can think about it. One, from an operational standpoint,
right.
You know, which is, you know, where do I have enough water and where don't I have good water, and how do I change what I'm doing, whether I plant more or plant less, or think about it like that. There's also a strategic component to it, which looks at it in the longer term, because operationally you're thinking about probably much this season.
Right.
Longer term, you're thinking about the sustainability of being able to be there for a long time and to be able to be producing. So you're looking over time to make sure that you are, you are not pulling out more than can be recharged.
Right.
And there's a term for investors now called ESG investors, which are kind of sustainability investors that are, and consumers are putting pressure on companies, on farming companies, as well as, you know, consumer products goods companies and others, to be sustainable, to know that they are being good stewards of the resources that they have. And so what WellIntel is able to do is not just that, you know, short term, where am I good, where am I bad, you know, ooh, let's alert to something that is, you know, acute, but it allows them to the data to be able to set sustainability metrics and then to continue to be able to report out against them and know that they're making progress.
So I've got the impression that from well water, maybe if you go too deep, you get a lot more salts.
Yes.
And
or other stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So the minerals, and so if you're using that groundwater to irrigate, you can actually be really destroying the soil in that you can see strips of that groundwater that's been irrigated with groundwater that are like white stripes.
yeah.
in the soil from salts, and then it's really screwing up the soil quality.
Yeah. So
when you're measuring, can you tell that getting certain levels, they're going to have to worry more about minerals?
No. Wait, that's it. So two things. Well, we don't do quality.
Uh-huh.
However, okay. Usually when you're drawing down that load, you know, you're working with a hydrogeologist who's helping you think about your supply and is doing measurements,
right.
you know, of quality at different levels within mm-hmm. wells and in different locations. And so what we can do is they'll know, you know, if you get down to 500 feet, you're starting to you know, get into a danger zone, for example.
Right.
We can say, hey, you're at 500 feet. And so now you're at a consideration point.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't report the fact that salts are coming, but we know when you've started to enter a zone that could do that.
So of all this data, I mean, when everybody talks about high technology and technology's application, you've got technology, obviously.
Yeah.
You've got sensors that are mm-hmm. putting in wells and across the country. And so you're gathering this data. And you put it on a cloud,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
So where's this process? I mean, you don't have like, okay, we got a truck leaving for cloud. You know? So you gather all this data from everything. I mean, where do you actually feed when you say you're putting this data on a cloud for people? So what happens?
So what happens is the data lands in a database. So it's, you know, it is saved for posterity. It means you can, you know, look back for a long time. But what we're doing is, you know, nobody just wants to look at a bunch of data points or get an Excel spreadsheet.
Right.
That's painful. And so what we've done is create essentially what we call an analytics platform.
Uh-huh.
So a bunch of visualization tools so that what you can do is start to look at change visually,
right.
you know, whether
right.
it's a map of change, whether it is, you know, the from a well standpoint, you can see, you know, this circle's getting bigger, this is getting smaller, this is what recharge looks like here. It's all about making it intuitive and quick to understand because you're seeing it visually.
Who gets to look at this stuff?
The customers who buy the sensors and deploy them across an area and into what we call a network, across an area, they have their account, and it is a web-based analytics platform, and they just log in and they can look at a number of different things. And they can even bring in, NOAA, has
North
weather station,
National
Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Right. Right.
You know, they've got weather data, and that's free, and we bring that in. The U.S. Geological Survey has some monitoring wells around, and if you know you are in an area where there is one, you bring that one in as well, and just start to build out that, you know, bigger picture of what's happening with that water table.
So from a farming standpoint, is this something that is just for large scale farming operations? Using this technology?
Yeah. So no, we were working with smaller farmers and then larger scale farmers. Of course, mm-hmm. larger scale farmers are looking across a greater area.
Sure.
But we have farmers who have one or two wells, and what they're certainly looking at it operationally, make sure that there's not an acute situation. But they're also looking at it year over year.
Mm.
You know, this year I recharged in, you know, December, January, February, up to make up a number 150 feet below the ground level, but the year before that I was at 145 feet. So you can start to understand those trends.
That's really interesting. I mean, the fact is that you're keeping track of what's going on underground.
Yes.
Because I think the thing that kind of interests me is when you first start talking about wells.
Yeah.
You know, I think about a big hole in the ground.
Yeah. Yep.
But then when you start talking about aquifers, and you talk about rock formations and water levels and how that impacts on food and agriculture production, it's kind of a whole different image.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. And, you know, the thing that's really cool is wells are the perfect vehicle, like window, into what's happening with that groundwater, right? It's tapped into the groundwater. So using the well as the measuring point for the water level and then having a few measuring points to be able to look at the aquifer makes a ton of sense. It is cost effective. It is in a place where you don't have to have any new wells. You don't have to do something special. You are actually looking at the places that you're producing from and understanding how things are going.
That's exciting. So how'd you get into this?
We were consultants. We were working with original equipment manufacturers in water and energy.
Well, I mean before that. When did you decide to study something that would be useful?
That project on groundwater and this realization that nobody knows what's going on with it. And part of that project also taught us that there's 15 million wells, private wells here in the United States. 15 million. They are the perfect place to turn them into real-time monitoring points with a little bit of simple technology. So we, Nick and I, thought, wow, groundwater is important. Nobody knows what it's doing. We got this beautiful asset of 15 million wells that could potentially be that window into what's happening for better management. And so we took a year and thought about it and thought, how would we do it?
Were you scientists at the time?
No, we were commercial marketing people that were laying around in friends' yards who happened to have wells, and we're testing technology ideas and stuff. Right. And finally, at the end of the year, we had enough positive feedback in terms of technology, in terms of people who'd be interested in investing, that we launched Well in Town. We launched it in 2013. It took. Took 3 years to develop technology because sensor in order to be non-invasive, we had to create the technology that made it so that it could be accurate and non-invasive and not cause people heartburn when they put it on their well, make it super simple, put some telemetry together, get the cloud together, get that all organized, and then we started doing proof of concepts, and then we started piloting, and now we're transitioning into being kind of standard operating procedure for folks.
So if you look down the road 5 years from now, where do you hope you are then? Where is the technology, maybe where you're the business, or where are we in need for information about groundwater?
So we're going to, that last question, we're going to continue to need a lot more groundwater because, the climate is changing. It's not as predictable as it used to be. Populations are growing, and they're growing in places where there isn't a lot of water, and we use it for a lot of other things as well. So the need to understand and manage groundwater is going to continue to grow. For us, where we would like to be, we want to be the water footprint platform for our customers, which means we certainly have our own sensors, and they're right now their quantity, supply, how much is down there. But we're working with other sensor manufacturers to get their data into their cloud, so you can start to see.
There's a cloud again.
Flow. There's the cloud. You can see flow. You can see weather stations. You can create this whole understanding around this groundwater resource and make it possible for. But the small farmer, as well as the multi location farmer, to be able to manage their operations in a way that they know that they are that they're getting the water that they need in order to do what they need to do. So,
John, if you're going 50 years from now, you probably start seeing the effects of climate change and figuring that you need to be looking to what's going on underground that matches what's happening with the climate.
On top, yep, because as what's happening on top changes and becomes more scattered, then you're going to turn to groundwater as a reliable resource. And then, unfortunately, if you keep turning to it without managing it, it's not going to be there.
So someday we're going to have to put labels on our food that's going to be saying, okay, this took the last gallon of water out of the, we're drilling down so-and-so, because I would imagine that you could probably now start looking at food products that you've worked with farmers around the country, and you got an idea of how much water, how deep they were going to be able to create those cantaloupes or whatever.
And kind of in how sustainable they might be, depending
on
where they are.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Well, it's exciting. And thanks for sharing this information about Well Intel. I want to thank Marion Singer for being on Farmer Table Talk.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
You You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.